This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Connor. No hey. Trevor today. He's at the beach. He's a beach bum.
Not always joined by Trevor.
Yeah,
we've both been here for every single episode. One.
Yep, all the way back to the beginning. Don't fact check. It's a lot of work on you. Don't want you to have to go through that. We got quite the show today. We're going to go over some Beaver State Fling, and then we're going to do a little Manufacturer's Cup update. We'll still do Trevor's Trivia, sans Trevor. We'll talk a little USA DGC. The PDGA opened their major bids, and then if we have time, we'll get to the rest of the questions that we didn't get to before from Twitter. If we have time.
Oh, I like that.
We'll see if we have time.
So we're going to do trivia in honor of Trevor.
Trivia in honor of Trevor.
Here we go.
Yeah. Trevor's...
Not memorial.
Honorary Trevor's trivia. Yeah, you understand. You'll get it. Before we get into today's show, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor. Many disc golfers have tons of extra discs cluttering up our closets and cars, and there are very few storage products on the market that are designed specifically for golf discs and that don't waste any space. Unfortunately, the ones that do exist are terribly expensive. Thankfully, there is DiscBox. DiscBox is the only low-cost disc golf storage product on the market. DiscBox is a simple disc storage bin that holds up to 30 discs, requires no tape or glue, and is made from recycled material in the USA. Go to discboxdg.com and you will find quantity discounts, wholesale options, multiple colors, and most importantly, no order minimum, so you can literally order just a single box if you want. DiscBox also makes a great player pack item. Visit discboxdg.com today and get your collection organized. Use code FOUNDATION for 15% off your order. Organized is a tough word for me there. But anyways, go to discboxdg.com today and use code FOUNDATION for 15% off your order. And thanks again to DiscBox for sponsoring the show. The Beaver State Fling went down. We had Gannon Burr taking down yet another win. Back-to-back weekends. Back-to-back wins for Gannon. Now making 3 wins this season. We have Ezra Robinson and Ricky Wysocki tied for second. Over on FPO, we had Holland Handley take it down over Owen Scoggins in second and Natalie Ryan in third. Focusing on FPO, this was Holland's first DGPT win, and it came in dramatic fashion. The main storyline here really developed on the last 4 holes. So she was down 3 with 4 to play. She birdied 15, Owen matched her, no strokes gained. Then she hits a 30-footer on hole 16 to gain 1 stroke on Owen. Then on hole 17, she's given an absolute gift as Owen threw one of the worst shots I've ever seen out of her, especially given the circumstances. She basically had an approach shot and just cut her forehand, chopped it over way too much, turned it into a cut roller that ended up OB, regained her composure, got up and down from there to save her 6, but Holland made a birdie to cut, it was 2-stroke lead with 2 to play, gonzo. Now it's all tied up going into 18. Owen was able to hold her composure on 18, parking it for birdie, which forced Holland to run this like 50-footer or so to force a playoff, and she drilled it dead center. The crowd went crazy. It was one of the like best clips I've seen. It was awesome. She drilled that and then birdies the first playoff hole to officially win. So she finished out her tournament with 5 straight birdies, 4 in regulation, 1 in the playoff to claim her first win. It felt like a long time coming, but at the same time, I actually like when they said on coverage it was her first Pro Tour win, it kind of surprised me because I keep forgetting that the other event she won is Throw Pink, which was just an A tier.
Yeah, that makes that. I was feeling the same way. Makes sense.
Because we constantly keep like picking her to win and like picking her to like she's going to do good, and she has. She's had a very solid resume. This is just the first time she's been able to actually capitalize on it and take it down, and it was very clutch performance. Because you know when I saw what happened on 17, my initial gut thought was, dang, like I thought it kind of sucked for Holland because I thought it was going to be like Owen gave it to her. But Owen then stepped up and threw a great shot on 17 and then parked for 18, forcing Holland to keep her momentum because
still
like,
made her earn it.
Yeah, because Holland was three birdies in a row into what ended up being her 5 birdie streak, but 3 birdies in a row, and she was hitting like some big putts. Like I think on 16 it was like a 30-footer, 17 was like a 25-footer. So she was like putting well, she was throwing the disc well, like she was doing what she had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when a competitor does that, like literally just throws a forehand into the ground and it rolls, like
yeah.
that can a lot of times become the focus. But then because of what Holland did on 18, that like owns forehand well, whereas yes, like had Owen just thrown it 10 feet higher, she would have won the event,
yeah.
most likely, because then she would have went par birdie if everything played out and she would have won by one. Holland couldn't have caught her.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, like that throw did technically kind of cost Owen the tournament,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't hand it to Holland. Like it opened the door and Holland still had to run through it with a birdie, a massive putt on 18 and birdieing the first playoff hole to actually win it. So
yeah.
awesome, awesome event out of Holland there, taking that down. The field obviously was a little bit wounded, but I don't really think that's that big of a story. Paige was at USADGC. Kristen still recovering from an injury. And then the rest of the European players are still over in Europe with the events going on over there. So trying to find the page here so I can pull up the rest of the results. Here we go. That article was just brutal. Couldn't find it. All right. Yeah, so beyond that, storyline-wise, like, you know, you had Rebecca Cox got in the mix. Missy Gannon struggled a little bit down the stretch to let Natalie Ryan take that podium from her. Val Mandahano was back kind of in contention, slowed up towards the end. And then beyond that, moving down, there wasn't any, like, shockingly bad or shockingly great finishes. Like I said, a lot of the top-end players weren't there. But I don't think that takes away necessarily from Holland. Holland showed up, did what she had to do, and if you watched the golf, especially down the stretch, those last five holes, it was incredibly impressive performance there.
That's awesome.
And she finally has a win. So now Holland Hanley, which is crazy to me that Ella Hansen got a win before Holland. Again, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel right because of the throw pink win.
Yeah.
But when Holland and Ella go head-to-head, and a lot of times by us, they're grouped into like the same category because I almost see them as the same player. Ella always felt like the one that would get herself in contention and collapse. But I guess what it was she was getting herself in contention more, so that developed more as a storyline versus Holland. Like, maybe she just wasn't putting herself in contention. I don't know why that's... Maybe it's because solely because she won throw pink that wasn't a storyline.
We got the Winthrop effect. She's a U.S. champion in her heart.
I think that's what it is. I think because she had won the U.S. Women's... Not U.S. Women's. See? There I go.
Yep.
There I go again. Because she had won throw pink... It felt like she wasn't winless
mm-hmm.
when statistically she was.
Yeah. Hunter, I want to ask you, like, watching this tournament, how different was it for you to watch this compared to previous years? Because you've played this course, not just been on it, but played it.
It definitely felt.
Because for those of you that don't know, on our West Coast tour, we went to this course almost a year ago today. Yeah. We had a bogey bro battle out there, and that course, I mean, it was probably the longest day of our trip.
Yeah.
And it was the first day of our trip.
Was it the first?
It might have been the second.
I think it was the second.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the second course we played.
Yeah.
But wow, we were out off the bat. So long.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's a hot take. Here's an opinion, right? Is having played that course, I enjoyed watching coverage of it a lot more. Not that I hadn't enjoyed it previously, but I'm surprised that it doesn't get... I'm surprised it doesn't get hated on more by viewers.
Okay.
Because like when I was watching it, like even having played it before, it's really hard to separate holes out there in my head
mm-hmm.
because they're all just in a field with like the same types of trees. Like
they all look really similar.
Yeah, and they're all like it was even as someone who had played it was kind of hard to know where drives were supposed to land.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really think there's anything you can do about it because I know the players absolutely love it out there. It's a gorgeous park. You're like far away from civilization, it feels like. So you're just very secluded. And I think that like all adds to the Milo like lore, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But as a viewer at home, like I was watching and certain holes when they do the flyover, it would like click in my head and I'd remember it. But then I'd still watch the players tee off and I'd be like, I don't know if that was a good drive or not.
Yeah.
And like some drives, it felt like a really good drive. Turns out they had like thrown it too far or mm-hmm. missed the gap they were going for and stuff, and you didn't learn the context until they were going to like their next shot. So I don't know.
There are some holes that definitely made me have more respect for throws.
Yes.
Because I'm like even hole one, knowing that hole one is like a hard shot.
Now hole 18, I don't think we played. I couldn't remember for the life of me.
It's a different hole because remember, or was that 17? The genius hole where it was up.
So that's 17 in the.
They didn't do it, did they?
Oh no, they did, but they. which he told us this when we were there, they, for the tournament, put it on that island green.
That's right.
Yeah, which makes it, because basically where they were throwing their approach shots is where the green was for us.
Okay.
So they were throwing their approach shots there and then attacking that little island green, because he showed us the peninsula and said that's where the green, but I thought that was hole 18 when we played it.
I think that was the last hole we played.
That's the last hole I remember.
Was the genius hole, right?
So that was 17 for their layout.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think that's, whatever hole 18 was, I don't know where that was. But we played 95% of that layout, I feel like. And it definitely helped add context.
Well, when we were out there, they purposefully took us on the hardest layout they had.
Yeah.
That, because they wanted us to play like the hardest layout. And it was, and it, yeah.
It was grueling. Yeah. So I don't know if it made me enjoy the tournament more or less. Because, okay, like, part of it was, like, I just have memories of that day because of how long we were out there.
Yeah.
And when you don't have the distance or the knowledge of the course that the pros do, I was just throwing the same shot over and over and over, and it got very repetitive for me. And so I think that it made the tournament coverage feel very repetitive for me. But I don't know if that's what it felt like to everyone at home. So if you haven't played the course and you're watching it, comment down below and let me know. Did it feel very repetitive to you, or is that just because I had played it and it felt repetitive to me when I played it? Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. But what the course does accomplish is plenty of stroke separation, a very exciting weekend of golf that's not just like, it really jumbled both fields together and had a lot of people in contention, which is exactly what you want, and it did it in a way that is fair and difficult. So it accomplished pretty much everything you would ever want a Pro Tour course to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
So if it accomplishes all of those things, and the only qualm against it is sometimes it's just hard to know where a shot landed and it was good or not, I feel like that's an okay, an okay substitute. Because on MPO, as we switch over to there, I mean, even when you look at the final leaderboard, you, like, the top 12, which actually is the top 15, are all within 6 strokes of the lead. But at one point, there was like 7 people tied for the lead in the final round, I think. Like, it was a jumbled mess. Like, you did not know until like holes 16-ish. I think it had basically turned into a 4-horse race, because you had Luke Humphreys, Ezra Robinson, Gannon Burr, and Ricky were like the ones that like could win. And then after hole 17, Ricky had already played hole 18. It turned into just Gannon or Ezra Robinson. Like, it was just a 2-horse race at that point. But like it was thrilling till the end. So that was very electric. But Gannon Burr was able to take down his 3rd Pro Tour of the year, back-to-back wins for him. This now makes him, in my opinion, I think in everyone's opinion, the best player in the world. I don't really think you can dispute that. He now has as many wins as AB, which with a much higher average finishing place, and has more wins than Calvin, which Calvin had a fine weekend out there, because I think he's one of the other guys you could throw into the conversation. He finished 4th, but AB came in 62nd, making this back-to-back weekends where he's been nowhere to be found. So he's went 44th, if I'm not mistaken, and then 62nd here. So Gannon has kind of separated himself. They'd been lumped in together, and what was funny is earlier in the season, it almost felt like Gannon was the one that was like shouldn't really be lumped in with AB. But then as the season's progressed, AB's inconsistencies have started to show again, and Gannon is just still Gannon.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not going anywhere, because let me actually look at Gannon's season. I don't know if he's finished outside the top 10. It's maybe once. Yeah, he has one outside the top 10 finish, 13th at OTB. Everything else has been inside the top 10, with a majority of them being inside the top 5.
Yeah.
And now 3 Pro Tour wins, 2 of those being Elite Plus events at Waco and at Portland. Crazy season so far. So Gannon Burr, definitely the front runner for Player of the Year. It's going to take, I mean, if Calvin won again, then we would have 3 players all with 3 wins, which is crazy. But it would probably take like Calvin or AB to get a 4th win if Gannon keeps playing at the level he plays, to have the wins plus the consistency, or if someone won a major, that would push him over the edge. But Gannon right now, the front runner, and I think he's going to be the front runner to win a lot of majors too. So that'll be very interesting. As we look at, you know, this tournament, in my opinion, Gannon's starting to earn a reputation of what I'd like to call the dream crusher.
Okay.
Because if we go to Waco, you had Luke Humphreys. This dream of winning his first Pro Tour event. It's all in his hands. And then he throws OB on 18. Gannon gets all the way to the basket. Next thing you know, Gannon Burr wins. Luke Humphreys' dreams are crushed. Now here we are. Beaver State Flink, hole 17. You find Luke Humphreys right there again.
Yeah.
They're knotted up, I believe, on 17. Gannon's actually playing safe and smart, leaving the door somewhat open for Luke. Luke goes aggressive, throws OB. Dream's not over,
mm-hmm.
but it's close. Tries a layup, goes OB. Does execute the layup from there, I believe, or he got across to where he had a circle two putt, missed the putt. It ended up taking a nine on 17. Dream crushed, but you still had Ezra Robinson in it. And Ezra Robinson also hasn't won a Pro Tour yet. So he won a silver event, but you know how we feel about those. He hasn't won a Pro Tour yet. So he steps up to 18, and Gannon throws a good shot. Ezra throws a better drive. I think actually Ezra might have had the tee. I don't remember, but Ezra's drive was well ahead of Gannon. So Gannon throws his approach shot first into a tree. Like way up there, but into a tree. Like he's not mm-hmm. getting, he's going to be able to get up and down, but he's not birding. It's par four. Ezra steps up and crushes his drive around the back and has like a 50-footer wide open. Gannon gets in there, actually throws a pretty miraculous shot to even get up and down from that spot to save his par. So Ezra now has a 50-footer to force a playoff.
But he had to. He's the dream crusher.
He is the dream crusher. Ezra has a 50-footer to force a playoff and just pulls it wide right. Gannon Burr, there you go. Crushed two players' dreams. Really, those players both crushed their own dreams because they had it in their hands. Now, Gannon might have played differently had they like played differently, but it is what it is. So Gannon ended up going 6-under on the last 10 to separate himself from all the players jockeying for position. Because like I said, I mean, you had Gavin Babcock was in position at one point to win, Luke Humphreys, Ezra, Ricky. Calvin started off the day in a good position but slipped. Gavin Rathbun was throwing himself in the mix there. I'm sure I'm missing players, but there was all kinds of players all in the mix. Matt Bell was randomly up there kind of all weekend long. But Gannon really at the final stretch slowly separated himself, and it wasn't that he fully separated himself until 17 and then 18, like I just mentioned. If you look at his stats, he only led the field in scramble rate, but he was just all around solid. Like there wasn't one category you can point to and be like, oh wow, there's the hole in Gannon's game. It's really good this was a X, Y, or Z course because he wasn't doing this well. It's like he did everything good, just none of it. Like he only led the field in scramble rate. So like only one thing did he do better than everyone else. But even that, he like was a three-way tie.
Yeah.
But he just was all around good. And I think that speaks to Gannon's game a lot of like why he is going to be good at every weekend is a lot of times you can see, and that's kind of what it takes to win on the Pro Tour nowadays. But sometimes like these course specialists, you can see like, oh, this player was able to win because they putted 55% circle two and 100% C1X. Like that's what separated him. Or, oh, this player hit 95% of fairways. That's what separated him. But a guy like Gannon, you can kind of copy and paste him most courses in the world, and he's probably going to be the favorite because he just has such a well-balanced game. Mm-hmm. Like there's not too many shots you can throw at Gannon Burr when he's hot that he's not going to execute. And it was a very impressive performance out of him. Now for Luke Humphreys, I think we kind of questioned this at Waco, and I think we had to question it again of like how many more opportunities is Luke Humphreys going to see?
I feel like I might be wrong, but I feel like this course is not the one I would expect him to win at.
Neither of them were. Waco, because Waco had the golf course, and that Lake Waco, and this one, like they both ask for more distance than you would have expected Luke Humphreys to answer, but both of them, he put himself in contention.
You think it's because he can just place it like in good spots, or
it has to be
maybe he can't, maybe he's not throwing far enough to get in a bad spot, and not that he doesn't throw far, but like
no, in comparison to the field. And when he was interviewed after, because he had a hot round two, they kind of put him in contention. I think he shot like 10 under or something like that, and
it's crazy.
When they were asking him, he was basically saying like, I'm not going to worry what everyone else is doing out here because like I just have to go get the birdies that I can get.
Yeah.
Because like for a guy like Gannon or Calvin or like some of these guys who have more distance, like they can get every hole.
Yeah.
But Luke, I think, was picking and choosing his spots to attack, which he's just a very smart player. And so I think when his release and timing's on, like when it's his weekend, that's how he can get himself in the mix, is he can play that really smart golf. But I believe he's 36 now. He's had two shots at wins this year. Obviously, this one he ended up falling back to like 9th or 10th place, I think. I don't know. But he was in position to win if you watch the tournament. Like I said, on 17, he went 9-5 to finish. You give him, if he goes par, he tied with Gannon. Waco, obviously, came in second. It's just a question of like, how many more of these opportunities is he going to get in the rest of his career to take down his first win? And how much is that pressure what leads to these mistakes we're seeing when he is in position to win?
Yeah.
Because both losses have been really at his own mistake. Like Waco, he threw OB on that approach shot. Here, he took a 9 on 17.
Yeah.
Like, both times, it's kind of been in his hands. Like, not that he's in the driver's seat, because Gannon still is a major factor. Like, Gannon could still birdie to his par on 18 or something. It's not like Gannon, like, it's not like Luke Humphreys had a 6-stroke lead and just had to walk it in. Like, he mm-hmm. still had to battle with Gannon, but he's taken himself out both times. And it's a question of, like, is the pressure almost too much for Luke Humphreys, where he gets to these, like, final stretch, final holes, this is his chance, this could be his last chance at a victory, maybe, because you just never know. The field isn't getting any older,
yeah,
by any means. Like, yeah, more and more young talent's been mm-hmm. pumped in. It's getting harder and harder to win out there. I wonder if that is part of what's leading to maybe, like, A, his really aggressive play on, like, 17, which I didn't dislike it, because he just kind of took it into his own hands. It's like, Gannon's playing smart. Gannon's playing safe. If I get up and down here, I can put a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
And then I can just basically par 18 and I win this thing. But I don't know. It's just something I thought of when I was watching it, of like, I feel like maybe that pressure is getting to be too much for Luke when he puts himself into these positions. That's why we see him, like, consistent all weekend, and then crack at the last second when it's like, this is your time to, like, pull ahead and do it, and then he cracks.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, Ezra Robinson is on the flip side of that, because I think he's the younger of the Robinson brothers.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken. He's not, like, crazy, crazy young.
Okay.
He's not a Gannon. But I think he's in his young 20s.
Okay.
But I think he's the next up for a win, because he's the highest rated player without a win on tour right now, I believe. I think he's also the highest, like, in the pro tour standings without a win. In general, he's not the highest without a win this year, because that would be Ricky. But he's put himself in contention a few different times and just has fallen a little short. This weekend, he had a 50 footer on 18 to make the playoff. It seemed to me like he rushed it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think he kind of is just a fast player, so he might have just been, like, sticking to his guns, sticking to his game. But, like, this is the moment of your career, and he took less than 10 seconds to step up to the putt and throw the 50-footer. And it was good height and everything. He just pulled it right.
Yeah.
And so you know that was kind of very disappointing, but he's been a very impressive player all season long. And I wouldn't have predicted it. I don't think anyone would have, that he's the better of the Robinson brothers this season after his brother went Worlds and Champions Cup last year.
That's crazy.
You know, everyone was thinking Isaac Robinson might be one of the best players in the world coming into this season, and he's not even the best Robinson brother this season.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wild. But Ezra Robinson's, I think he's 7th in the Pro Tour standings. He's in the top 10. He's in a very good position. Dang. He's playing very solid all year long. I think one of these weekends is going to click and just be his time. And unfortunately wasn't this weekend, but for him, I think he's going to just, like, he's a guy who seems to just keep giving himself different chances to win. Mm-hmm. And he's getting better and better almost, it feels like, every weekend. So I feel like it's just one of these days, it's going to be his weekend, and it's going to click. So
yeah,
he's definitely the player to keep an eye on as we continue to, especially as we head to, like, Idlewild and stuff. I don't know. His game isn't like his brother's. His game's definitely different. I think he has more distance and stuff, and I don't think he's quite as automatic as a putter. Like, he's definitely a very different player than his brother, mm-hmm. but they both play the same courses. Like, they both grew up in the woods.
Yeah.
So I think you still are going to like him when you get to Idlewild and stuff like that.
Watching them looks very different.
They're drastically different players.
He's a lot less, like, robotic, I would say. But I really enjoy watching him, though.
Yeah, no, I like him a lot, so... Now, the final player I want to talk about here is Ricky, because
I was going to ask your opinion on Ricky.
If you take the Pro Tour Championship out, right, it has been almost a year since Ricky's last regular Pro Tour win.
Mm-hmm.
He's currently 2nd in the Pro Tour standings for this year just because he keeps gaining contention, but he, for some reason, can't put it together. This felt like the weekend, like this final round, it felt like this is it for Ricky. He's about to do it. And what it really came down to, if I look at the hole scores, is I think it just was like, Ricky went par on 17, 18 and lost by one. Like, that's kind of what it came down to. Because the final round, he shot a 7-under bogey free. He was tied with Gannon going into the final round. Gannon shot 8-under bogey free. But Ricky just, like, the day before, he had thrown a crazy drive on 18, got way up there, and then just botched the upshot. And then on the final round, he just didn't get off the tee well on 18. and ended up in a weird spot where he had to pitch out and then got up and down from there to end up taking the par. And had he birdied that, it would have forced Gannon to try to birdie, or at least try to do something on 18. Instead, Gannon just kind of, which Gannon was trying to birdie because he was fighting with Ezra, but mm-hmm. the par wouldn't have been enough if Ricky was already in the clubhouse at 23.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's definitely a weird one to be this far into the season with how good Ricky's playing and him not have a win. It definitely feels like there's a story there, but it also, it's just so hard to win. It's a weird one because Ricky's a proven winner, one of the most proven winners of all time. He knows how to win. He is typically very clutch, but for some reason, something's just not clicking in the clutch this season.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting close to the finish line. It's kind of what we saw out of Calvin towards the beginning part of the season, and then he rattled off back-to-back wins. I feel like that's what's going to happen for Ricky. I would be shocked if we went this whole season and didn't get a Ricky Wysocki win, mm-hmm. just because he keeps putting himself in contention. It's like, one of these weekends, it is going to click. Like, one of these weekends, you know, Ricky is going to raptor leg in a 50-footer for a win.
Yeah.
Like, that is going to happen. It's almost inevitable. It's just surprising it hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think all eyes are kind of on Ricky because, like, this is a big turning point for his season here. Like, to be halfway in, you already have two guys with three wins, one guy with two wins, and you're sitting there winless, but you're in second place in the Pro Tour standing. Like, if you want to push for that Player of the Year, you got to catch some wins.
Yeah.
And you already have the major narrative building of 7 years without a major win. Like, you already have that kind of building here. So, you know, you got to like him at the rest of the majors. I think the courses play well for him, but obviously there's a narrative there. And then he's won at most of the courses that we're about to face the rest of the season. So I like him getting a few wins, but eventually he's just going to run out of events to put his name in the hat for Player of the Year if Gannon keeps playing the way Gannon's playing. Yeah. So I don't think it's like Ricky's season isn't on the brink of being like a absolute flop. It's just Ricky's season's on the brink of not being Player of the Year caliber if he doesn't string together a few wins. Because mm-hmm. Gannon Burr's, you know, we said this about AB, and AB slowed up, so this could very easily happen to Gannon. But Gannon most likely will end the season with 4 or 5 wins. It's hard to imagine him not getting a few more. So if you are trying to chase down a guy that's probably going to get to 5 wins and we're halfway in the season, you got to have one heck of a second half.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where Ricky's at. I think the pressure's kind of building there. So it's been very interesting to watch Ricky this first part of the season. So, yeah.
Well, looking at the final scores on there, it made me feel like it's more fun to see where people are finishing stuff like that whenever you have been on the grounds at a course. Because I didn't play the Milo course, but I shot it, obviously, yeah. and recorded it and saw you guys play it. And I'm just thinking, like, I'm practically playing bogey golf out there. Like, those holes are just so long. Like, obviously not every hole, but, like, I'm definitely
pretty
getting
much every hole. Because, like, the shortest hole in the course is,
yeah, I'm playing bogey golf.
There's 197. Hole 13 is 197. But okay, beyond that, 390 is the next shortest.
And just seeing, like, even whenever you say, like, Ricky shot a 7-under bogey-free round, like, that's just, it really puts into perspective how good these guys are and makes it, like, whenever you can compare how you would play that course to how they're playing the course, it just is a crazy feeling.
Yeah.
It makes, like, you guys listening, you have to come play New London before Worlds. Like, it just, because that's going to make that course a lot of fun. I cannot wait. For how much we play New London, it's going to be so awesome to see a bunch of pros out there shredding it. And, it's going to be fun.
Well, what's going to be funny about New London is the fact that, like, I spent an entire year trying to shoot under par.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the winner's probably going to go, like, 7 or 8 under both rounds out there.
Yeah.
Just be like, dang. Like, that's crazy. It took me a full calendar year, and the best I got was like 2 over, and the pros are gonna come out there and just mop the floor with that course.
Yeah,
it's not an easy course. It's just like, that's just gonna happen.
This is like a little bit off topic, but I do have a question. Do you think that this is only a few years ago, whenever Paul was dominant, but Paul shot 10 under on that course, right, on New London?
Yep.
Do you think the best player today? Well, today is probably Gannon Burr, is that what you'd say? Do you think he's better than Paul was whenever he shot 10 under? I don't feel like it was quite long ago enough for that to be the case.
So the tough part is Paul knows the course
better than anyone
else.
That's where the
10 under is, like, because Paul could even go out and shoot more than 10 under. Because that course, like, if you think about it, every hole at New London, and it's similar about most pro tour courses they play. Every hole is birdieable. Disc golf is just an easy sport when it comes to scoreability.
Yeah.
Like, it just is what it is.
When it comes to scoring, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, it par, putting's so easy in disc golf, especially for pros, that just makes scoring easy. Like, it's going to be easy to get birdies. So, mm-hmm. like, 18 holes at New London are all birdieable.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're not going to get all 18. So, like, someone could go 14 under, realistically.
Mm-hmm.
Someone could go 15 under. Like, it would be ludicrous, but it's possible. So, that, I don't know necessarily. I think what makes the modern day player better is the consistent level they're able to play at.
Okay.
So I think it's like someone might be able to get close to 10 under twice in a row.
Okay.
Is more what makes that step. Not like the one round. Like, I think even if you take 2015 Macbeth, right? Yeah. The sport's evolved 9 years. And you put 2015 Macbeth.
That was 9 years ago?
On, yeah.
Gosh.
If you put 2015 Macbeth on any of the modern day courses, I don't think there's a course record that 2015 Macbeth couldn't touch.
Okay.
But I don't know if 2015 Macbeth is competing at the same level that everyone else that like get that Gannon is right now, or Calvin is right now, or even Paul might be right now. I think the thing is, it's just the consistent the ability to be consistent at that level is what separated the modern day touring pros from back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Then
that makes like, sense, because now almost the entire field has the capability of throwing
exactly.
insane shots.
Yeah.
But it's just how many times can they do it over and over again?
Yeah.
So that makes a lot
of
sense.
Because I think Simon's also shot 10 under at New London.
Yeah.
I think like 10 under seems to be like this is the course record. I think Worlds, someone will probably get 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll happen. But I think that the best player through two rounds will probably average like 7 under.
Okay.
I think the person who comes out of there 14 under, like they win an 8 and a 6 or a 9 and a 5, like I think that'll be incredible to get okay. out of there. So it'll be very exciting to see.
Mm.
Now, I had this thought, this theory that I came up with while I was watching Beaver State Fling.
Okay.
Because we saw, I think it was the final round, it might have been the second round, that Rebecca Cox was on coverage, and she had one spit out dead center. She bounced off the pole, mm-hmm. came out. Then a few holes later, she had a tap in that bounced off the pole and balanced on the edge and then fell in.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were great putts. Neither of them seemed that fast. They might have been a little high or something, but both of them were like dead center. They just hit the pole.
Yeah.
Then Gavin Babcock on, I believe it was 17, had a putt that probably was a little fast, but again, it wasn't like a crazy drill it into the middle and then wonder yeah. what happened, and it bounced off the pole again. Okay. And he was ticked, like he took his disc and like smacked it against the top and then tapped it in and then took his disc out and then like slapped the basket as he walked away.
He was real mad.
Well, at that point, he was in contention for the win, and in his head, like that could have cost him the tournament.
Yeah. It was a good putt.
Yeah, ended up not costing him the tournament per se, but like I fully understood the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was looking at him, I'm wondering if part of the reason that we see so many now. Part of the reason on the Pro Tour is some people just putt really hard.
Yeah.
Some of the putts that are considered spit outs aren't spit outs. They were just bad putts. Like, I get that part. I'm all in on that argument. But I'm wondering if even the reason we see some of that more than we do at local courses is because they're almost always playing on brand new baskets.
Hmm.
Like, Innova for this event obviously
they
wants
put
brand
in
new
different baskets.
Yeah, so they're like, they are brand new looking disc catchers with mm-hmm. the new Innova logo on them and everything, because like, why wouldn't you? You're sponsoring the tournament.
Yeah.
Same thing when like you go to a Prodigy event. Of course, Prodigy wants their best foot forward, so they're not going to have the baskets that have been in the ground 10 years mm-hmm. out there, because they're worn in. They're a little rusty. They're whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like that little layer of rust and that like beat in on the chains where the like sheens beating off stuff is like
yeah.
part of what makes a disc golf basket catch so well. So I wonder if part of the reason we see so many spit outs on the Pro Tour is because they're putting in new baskets, basically. Because
maybe the chains, like, they have so, like, they're slipping against each other better, so they move
easier. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm wondering if they're...
Instead of having a little bit of grit in there.
Well, like, you've played in Charlotte, right?
Yeah.
The like, really old Innova that's, like, have some rust on them. Like, mm-hmm. they catch everything.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's what's going on. It's like we are all playing on more normal baskets that have been beat in for years.
Yeah.
And so there's just a little grit to them.
Yeah.
Like they, whatever it ends up doing, maybe it's a combination
it's like
of how
a slight
the,
oxidation.
Yeah. Whether it's just the combination of how the chains rub against each other or just literally how they grab the disc more. Like I think they catch the disc a little bit better. So then when the Pro Tour plays on brand new baskets,
I would say it makes the most sense that there would be more friction in between the chain links, like whenever they've been out for a long time. So the chains would be stiffer.
Yeah,
wouldn't
so
give
be,
as much.
So like when you hit it, it'd be more likely to just like catch it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something to think about.
Hmm. That's what we need to do. I'm going to get, I have a one of the MVP like black hole baskets. I'm going to just leave it outside my yard this whole year. And then I'm going to get a brand new one at the end of the year.
And then we'll just see which one spits out more.
I'm going to need somebody else to putt because I'm not going to be able to putt consistent enough to see. But
well, we'll just build a robot too.
Oh, there we go. Yeah,
throw
yeah.
the putts.
Yeah, we'll just build a robot. It seems really easy to build a robot to throw
Very
disc.
Easy. Yeah. Someone's already done it, so we just copy them.
Oh, yeah, easy.
Now, the final storyline here was Nate Doss. Boss Nate Doss made a return to the Pro Tour scene. You got to see him on coverage in round one. Unfortunately, that was the only time he was on coverage. because, I mean, it was just awesome to see him out there. He ended up finishing 71st, which, like, I don't really know what you... He shot under par, which is great.
There was just a part of me that really, really, really wanted him to just destroy
There was a part of all
there.
Of us that wanted him to go out there and shoot, like, 10 under first
Like,
round.
I knew he wasn't going to, but, like, I really wanted him to. Yeah,
what I'm hoping is... Because he came out of retirement, right? Like, he retired 2018, 6 years ago was his last time he played. I think he even won a Pro Tour in, like, 2017 or something. He won GMC. So, like, he went out kind of on top. And then... just didn't renew his PDGA membership. You couldn't find his stats, which now you can. Thank you, finally. We've almost as a bit renewed his PDGA membership like four times.
Yeah, yeah.
So he finally, you can see it again and everything. But he had made a statement in like his press conference of like, he saw a lot of the guys that he was playing with during his prime, like playing at USDGC.
Yeah.
And he was like sit at home or he was doing commentary or something. And he like had the thought of like, I should be out there.
Yeah.
Because, like, he should be.
Uh-huh.
He's a world champion, a USDGC champion, a Pro Tour champion, multiple-time National Tour champion. Like, he has all these accolades of, like, and he's not that old. He's in his,
no.
I think he retired when he was in his young 30s. So, he's, like, probably mid to upper 30s now. So, he, like, is the age of a lot of guys that are still touring. Not that he should tour because he has a kid and a brewing company and all this stuff. But it's really cool to, like, see them out because it, like, I don't know, just as a piece of history and for fans like me where, like, I was getting into disc golf as the Nate Doss era was kind of ending and the baton was being passed to Macbeth. Like, I watched a lot of Nate Doss coverage. So it gets you excited to see them again. And so, like, if he comes back to USDGC, like, of course I'm following that Nate Doss card. Like, who's not following Nate Doss card? So I'm hoping, you know, I think that this kind of scratched the itch of, like, he got out there. He got to be competitive again. He was on coverage round one. He got the fun like aspect of all of that. I'm hoping this kind of like reignites something where he makes it out to Worlds or he makes it to USCGC. And it's just like a once or twice a year, just like, you know, with the Will Schustrix of the world and Feldberg. And like you saw Climo in the skins match, like just like those guys where they'll make their appearances here and there. And you get to like watch a piece of history. I'm hoping that happens with Nate Doss again. I hope this was just the first stepping stone. Because it was awesome to watch him play.
Yeah.
It was great.
I mean, like, one of the best things that have ever happened to me was at USDGC whenever they had...
That skins match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Kenny, Barry Schultz, Schustrick.
Who was the fourth? Sexton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Sexton. Yeah. That was like that was the best thing. That was
like
the
2015 dream card.
That was what I was most excited about out of the entire week.
Yeah.
It was
incredible.
That was like the only thing that I looked at the time that was happening, and like I paid attention. Other than that, I just kind of walked around, but like I knew when that was happening.
Yeah,
because I went. It was. It's just so much fun. That's so much fun to me.
Yeah, it was incredible. So the Manufacturer Cup update post Beaver State fling, big news. Discmania has done it. They have overtaken Discraft for the lead, gaining 43 points on them this weekend because they were able to get five players inside of the top 10 this week to only one from Discraft. Crazy week for Discmania. Five players in the top nine even. This is the first time they've taken the lead since week four. So they now have 291 points. Discraft has 286 points. And then in third, we have Innova at 162. Dynamic Disc has 96. Prodigy has 74. DGA at 47. MVP at 36. Westside at 25. Castle Plaza 23, and Mint rounds out the top 10 at 15. Some things to note here. Like I said, Discmania had five players in the top nine taking a lead for the first time since week four. Discraft only earned 1 point, their lowest total of 2024. Their prior lowest was 7 points, and that point was actually gained by Luke Taylor, funny enough. So wasn't even gained by one of their top dogs. And then Gavin Rathbun continues his amazing season as an open bag player, finishing tied fourth, giving him 58 points on the year, ranking him sixth amongst the manufacturers. So he would be right behind Prodigy by himself. Just Gavin Rathbun alone, because he's still unsponsored by a manufacturer. So this is the Manufacturer's Cup, so we're not going to put Gavin Rathbun on there because he's not a manufacturer. But had a manufacturer signed him, or if a manufacturer picks him up mid-year, something to think about, 68 points. 58 points, sorry, just waiting for him. That could be big.
That is big.
Something to look at. Edwin also put together this Gannon Burr player profile. I believe this is through Portland. I don't think he's updated yet for Beaver State. But I love looking at these because, you know, he basically puts like a Madden type of overall attributes on him.
And he's just a gorgeous stat sheet.
Yeah. We'll probably throw this up on the screen so you can look at all, but I'm going to just talk about the attributes super fast. So he gives him a 99 scoring, 96 power, 96 accuracy, 94 scramble, 92 putting to make him a 96 overall MPO rank of number two. I don't know where that MPO rank comes from, but 96 overall attribute for Gannon Burr. I feel like it's pretty accurate. I feel like if I was playing Disc Golf Madden, it would make sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, maybe what only way I'd be upset is if someone's at 99 overall and it's not Gannon. Like, as long as 96 overall is like the peak, like that's as high as someone gets. Because, like, if not, then Gannon should probably be in, like, Gannon is the 99 overall if someone's going to be it. Yeah. So that's my only qualm with it. But the guy's just good. He's just good. His average finishing place through Portland was 5.1. He's averaging fifth place. Mm-hmm. After Beaver State, it's probably below fifth as his average finishing place. Like, that's just a crazy season so far.
I feel like I saw an Instagram video this morning. He posted it a little while ago, but it was just of him putting. And it looks like he's taking a little bit of steam off his putts.
He might be, yeah. What was crazy is on 17, hole 17, he had a 110-foot approach into the island green.
Yeah.
And he didn't even throw a jump putt. He just threw a normal putt.
Wow.
Yeah, just a normal, didn't jump, didn't step forward. 110 feet, just threw a normal putt and touch the pole.
What?
Yeah, he just spun it.
It must be easy to throw putts whenever you're Slender Man.
Yeah.
You know?
That's like, I want to try just like how far could I just throw my normal putt? Because he did it like
32 feet.
He was stepping up and like if he was going to jump putt it, like that's fine. Like I could jump putt 100 feet.
Yeah.
Like that's not that. Mm-hmm. But then he just putted it.
That's
like,
insane, dude. Wow. That's okay. Amazing. And that's why like that. I mean, he's just got the perfect stature for our sport.
He's got the build.
That's cool. I was explaining to I was playing disc golf with my sister-in-law's boyfriend this weekend, and he's a super athletic guy. Like, always played sports his whole life, super into sports, went to school for, like, some, what is the, sports something, I don't know. what's the thing where you,
Exercise science?
Yeah, exercise science. He went to school for exercise science or something like that.
I was going to say, that's definitely probably not it, but
as in, he's really into sports, plays a lot of sports.
Yeah.
He's very athletic.
Sports management, maybe?
Very, very athletic. And so he wants to be like a trainer. And so we were playing disc golf.
It probably is exercise science.
Yeah, probably. And so he is, again, very athletic, but like everybody, he tries disc golf for the first time. He'd made all the same mistakes.
Yep.
Just throwing it really high. I mean, I think I could see in his eyes that he was getting really frustrated by my dad out driving him.
That's
by
fun.
Like, I mean, my dad was throwing like twice as far as him.
Yeah.
Because my dad, he's 51 years old, but whenever I like was teaching him how to play disc golf, I was teaching him all the form and everything.
Yeah.
And my dad is an incredibly good listener. He's not like a person who's too prideful to like keep trying to do something on their own. He's like, yeah, if you know better how to do it, I want you to tell me because I want to do it better.
Yeah.
And that's how he is. And so he just is like, my dad can throw perfect like dead straight shots. He's just dirty with them. And so my sister-in-law's boyfriend, he's just like throwing the super sky shots.
Yep.
And I could see him start to get frustrated when my 51-year-old dad would walk up and just pure like a shot further than he's ever thrown. But that's whenever I told him that like that's what like the hard thing about you going to the sport is that you're very athletic and you're pretty strong. So you like you think that you can just like throw it hard. For me, it was easy because I knew I couldn't throw it hard.
Yeah.
I wasn't a sports person, so I had to learn the form in order to be competitive at it. So I learned the form first instead of just thinking I could muscle it. And like the disc golf is very much like a great equalizer because you don't have to be athletic. Like super, super athletic people are not always the best in disc golf. You can get people who like you wouldn't think are super athletic and they just are like the perfect form for disc golf. But then again, if you combine someone who's super athletic with great timing, then you get a great player. But that's what's fun about disc golf, man. You can take your super athletic friends out
and shove it.
And if you've been playing disc golf for a while and they haven't, then
you're going to beat them.
Or you just get yourself in that really annoying situation where they throw a bunch of overhands and beat the crap out of
that
you.
That's also, yeah, that also could
And they're like, how long have you been playing this silly little game?
Before we get into Trevor's trivia, I want to tell you a little bit about our subscription box. Foundation Disc Golf subscription boxes are not just a way for us to dump old inventory on you like you might find from some other retailers. Each month, we are designing custom stamps, placing specific orders with manufacturers, and curating the box to a specific theme to make sure you get way more out of the box than what you paid for. What do you pay, you might ask? $45 and you get 3 premium discs plus a swag item each and every month. This month's probably our most coherent and ambitious theme yet. We can't wait for you all to get your hands on it. So make sure you act fast before all the spots fill up. So you can go to foundationdiscs.com/pages/subscription-box. That's a lot. So just click the link in the description down below or in the show notes. That's way easier. And you can learn more and subscribe there. But like I said, this month's box, we...
Trevor
kind
said,
of went all in.
Trevor said on the mailbag that it's the one that he's looking the most forward to.
Yeah.
Any of the boxes.
I think we have two. Yeah, there's 2 custom stamps in there. And then, like I said, the theme is just crazy. We partnered with a company to like make the theme get all tied together. We worked with different manufacturers to make sure all the discs worked within that theme. And it's just, we try really hard every month to get our theme to work. This month, it just kind of the pieces all came together and it really clicked. So
very exciting.
Super stoked about this month. Again, click the link in the description or in the show notes to learn more, or if you just go to foundationdisc.com and search subscription box, you can...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Find it there too. So, Trevor's trivia. I figured we would just do what Trevor does a lot of times and just go to Sporkle.
Okay.
And pick a disc golf quiz that we wanted to do and just see how we do it.
I love that. Yeah, let's do it.
So, some nominees here are...
Disc golf discs.
Disc golf discs. Can you name the company that made the disc? I feel like that'd be too easy. But we can do it. Disc golf disc used by touring pros in 2021. Very niche.
Okay, I feel like I could be okay at that.
I don't know if I know 2021 well enough, but we could definitely
try.
I
feel like I could just like... That one sounds intriguing to me.
I think we've already done the stage with 100 plus. Can you pick the real name of disc golf discs while avoiding the decoys?
What do you mean by... What do they mean by decoys?
I'm assuming they'll just throw a random name up there and it's just like...
Oh.
We don't know if it's a name or not.
Oh, that sounds like
Let's
fun.
Just try that one.
That sounds like a good one time. That Trevor would make for us.
Yeah, okay. Let's try this one.
I love the disc questions. That's my favorite part of disc golf.
All right. Let's play the quiz. Okay, there's the Rattlesnake, the
That's
Darbian.
A real disc.
We only have a minute. Rattlesnake
is a disc.
The Darbian, not a disc.
Not a disc. Crank is a disc.
Oh, shoot. I'm supposed to pick the right ones. Rattlesnake. Ah, we've got two wrong. The Crank's a disc. Okay. Cardinal.
The Rattlesnake is a disc. That's a lie.
Okay. The Vikings.
The Rattler.
A disc. No, Connor. The Wahoo's a disc. Is the Cardinal a disc?
Not that I know of.
Okay. The Focus is a disc. The Nuke's a disc. Slasher? No.
No.
Flick? Yes. Ape? Yes.
Yes.
Pacer?
No, I think. No.
Wraith?
Yes.
Stampede?
No.
Big Bear?
No.
Wolf? Yes. Buzz? Yes. Orc? Yes.
Tycoon?
Tycoon, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Surge, yes. Boss, yeah.
Rocket,
oh,
no.
We missed two, so we couldn't. We missed Groove and Machete were the other two we could have gotten.
We would have gotten.
We would have easily gotten that.
We would have just, the only one we would have gotten wrong,
it was because we got the
is
Rattlesnake.
Is because I was thinking of the Rattler.
Yeah, and the other one I clicked wrong was because I thought I was guessing the ones that were fake.
So we basically won.
Let's try one more. Let's do the disc golf disc used by Tory Pros
like
in 2021.
Is it timed again? I didn't like that.
Yeah, but 10 minutes, but we won't go the full 10 minutes. Okay. Enter disc. So Ricky, we have Ricky Eagle, Calvin, Paul, Adam Hammes. Shoot. Kyle Klein, Kevin Jones, James Conrad, Nicola Castro, Chris Dickerson.
Dagum.
2021, let's just go Destroyer. It's going to be on at least one person. There we go. Got on two. Paul, we have the Force.
Mm-hmm.
We should have the Luna.
Buzz.
The Buzz.
You can do Rock. Calvin carries a Rock.
Rock. Oh, Ricky and was Ricky. On Innova. Oh, true, we got Ricky. We got the Pig.
Yeah.
Calvin. 2021, don't we have the Tor? Well, we should have a T-Bird in one of their bags,
Firebird.
Right?
Firebird.
Firebird. Thunderbird. No, I don't know if you ever carry it. Eagle. Mm. They definitely carried Eagles. Yep.
AVR.
AVR, good one.
You can do.
What does Calvin putt with? Not an AVR.
I thought he put with KC AVR. Does he not?
Nope, but Ricky had one in there.
Oh, there, yeah, I know Ricky does.
What does Calvin putt with?
P2s?
Or does he go with Omegas? Okay, let's just ignore him for a second.
I think it might be Omegas. But yeah, let's do for Eagle.
Oh, let's say, so we can get some of these Discraft guys. They definitely had Raptors.
Yeah.
Only Adam.
You can what do PD2 for Eagle.
Oh, I just searched PD.
Or a Cloudbreaker.
PD, PD2. So we got Kyle and Eagle. Kyle and Eagle, we could probably get their whole bag.
Yeah.
MD3, P2, Rainmaker. Wow, they didn't have a Rainmaker for Eagle in there. That just feels like a
is
lie.
Is Cloudbreaker in there? Or would that just be under?
Oh, it's probably under DD3.
Yeah, you can do FD3.
FD3.
FD, probably.
FD3. I think I just tried FD. I got the FD for Kyle, not for Eagle.
Okay, gotcha.
PD, PD2, DD3, FD3.
For Calvin,
DD3.
Was the Toro out in 2021?
No, I just typed it.
You can do Zone.
Zone, great one. Con, great one, Con. Dickerson was in Prodigy, so
did you do Wasp?
D1, M4, PA3. Oh, Kevin Jones is also.
The Prodigy bag is so easy.
Yeah, PA3.
Did you do D1?
I did do D1. They probably had X1s. Yep.
D3s.
They both had D3s. Yet? Oh, Kevin Jones probably had his like reverb.
Yeah.
Oh, nope. Must not have been out yet. Distortion.
Okay. No, that not out, that yet. Out yet.
A2. Kevin had an A2. What else did Chris throw? Chris didn't even throw M4s. Was he an M2 guy? He was an M2 guy. M1. Yeah. M3. You can't. There's no really wrong answer.
Go MX1.
It wasn't out yet.
MX3.
Wasn't out yet.
You sure the MX3 wasn't out in 2021?
This 3 years ago. Yeah.
3 years is a long time in disc golf.
He probably had F1s, F3s, F5s.
Did you type in Wasp? Because Paul should have a Wasp.
Wasp. Oh, they both had Wasps.
Okay.
I wonder if they had a Nuke, maybe? No.
You can go Avenger SS.
Paul probably had Zeus.
You can go Avenger SS as well.
Avenger SS? Nope.
That's not true.
Heat, maybe? Was this Paul's doing his heat
back
then?
Was he doing
then?
The heat at the time?
According to this, he was. We're missing one mid for Paul.
You can do the Undertaker.
Yep. And what was Paul's other mid? Buzz, Wasp.
Did he have something more of a stable? Did he have a... With the Wasp? No, the Wasp was his understable disc because he did the CT. Or the Jawbreaker, whatever. What was his other mid?
No, the zone count as a putter.
Okay.
Adam Hamas also. Oh, he did have a zone. They put it. That's funny. They put it as a mid for Hamas. Oh, Hamas putted with Focus, I think. Yeah. Okay. So we're only missing two discs for Hamas's bag.
Did Paul have a drone in there?
Yep.
Yep.
There it is. We're missing two fairways for Paul.
Did he have a Raptor? We were.
I wonder if he
Raptor.
Did a Predator. He did.
Nice.
He did Predator and then Onyx.
Yep. Nice.
Oh, no, they put distance. The Onyx as a distance driver.
What's his other fairway?
Well, the Athena wouldn't have been out yet.
Did he
Undertaker
have
Heat Predator Vulture?
Yeah, that's it.
Nope.
Oh, what? He had the Mantis in his bag for like a day, but that's not it.
Nope.
Oh, man.
We're also missing only one mid for Hamas's bag. We're missing one disc for Paul and one disc for Hamas. I think we have 30 seconds. I think we're going to give us 30 seconds because that'll be 5 minutes and we'll just see where we're at.
What's in the mid? You could do Meteor, but neither one of them have
no,
Meteor.
I already typed the Meteor. Buzz OS, maybe?
Maybe.
Nope.
My goodness, what's another Discraft mid?
I wonder if
I'm sure people are yelling at their phones right now trying to
get... What is Adam Hamas' other mid?
I don't know. What's another mid?
But let's focus on the fairway that Paul had.
I tried. It's hurting my head. For Calvin, can you? We could do... what's another fairway? Did you try Thunderbird? Because maybe Calvin had Thunderbird.
Nope.
Really?
3, 2... Shark. Nope. 1, 0. Okay, we're done. We got 58. 58 out of 127.
It will give us the answers.
Yeah, let me see if I can... Can I just, like, stop it? Resume. I don't know if I can stop it.
That's going to kill me. I need to know.
We'll just let it go. Once it hits 10 minutes, we can come back. We'll come back and see what we're
missing.
Let's
just sit in silence for 4.5 minutes.
All right, I'm just kidding. Now, this past weekend, we had another major go down, the United States Amateur Disc Golf Championship. Fun fact about it that I didn't know, that's MA1 only. Because I guess because U.S. Women's has FA1.
Oh, okay.
So USA DGC is just MA1. But we had Ryan Mahon take it down, Lucas Carmichael come in second, and Gavin Cunningham and Ross Kimbrell tie for third there. So Ryan Mahon, I feel like I've heard
Ryan
his name.
Ryan Mahon.
Maybe I'm thinking of Jake Mahon. I wonder if he's Jake Mahon's brother.
How many times do you think he's heard that joke in his life?
Probably a lot.
Oh, what's up, Ryan Mahon?
He played the chess.com and came in 86th.
That's not great.
No, it wasn't great, but trying to see. So he's went on the Pro Tour a few different times before, it seems like, but never really done too hot out there. He played the Battle for Bedford. That's probably where I know his name.
Oh,
he came
okay.
in 10th the Battle for Bedford a few years ago.
Dude, that's pretty
so,
sick.
So, yeah, there you go, though. He's a USA DGC champ.
Come
he
on,
is
Ryan
an amateur major champion. Big moment.
We clap for people on this show.
Speaking of PDGA majors, they just opened the bids for 2026 and 2027. The only one that is still open for pro that they still take bids on is Worlds, which I find very fascinating. Oh. USDGC is already locked in. European Open's locked in. Champions Cup, they don't do bids. They decide it just is Worlds, which why I wanted to bring it up is why does the PDGA still operate this way for Worlds, and should they? Like, should they still put it out of, like, submit your bid if you want to host the World Championship? Hmm. Or should they just do it?
I don't know.
Well, what do you think?
I feel like the bid, I like Worlds. Obviously, it's going to move around either way, so that doesn't matter. I don't know. So I guess with a bid, you got to ask, like, is the best winning, or is the most money winning?
Well,
the answer is the most money's winning.
It's not even necessarily the most money. It's just sometimes there's only one bid.
True.
Like, I think. When Worlds came to Lynchburg,
well,
I'm pretty sure there was like a U.S. bid, which was Lynchburg, and then there was the European bid.
Yeah.
And we got it, and then next year went to Europe, which tells me there's probably like...
It feels like the bid probably shouldn't happen.
To what I think, if I were in control,
okay,
if I were the PDGA, I would do two things.
I think you would do a bang-up job.
I would remove the like local control aspect. Because what it does, in my opinion, is if the local community knocks it out of the park, the PDGA gets all the credit.
Yeah.
And then if the local community fumbles the bag on something, the local community gets all the hate.
Yep.
So it's a lose-lose situation for the local community.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, do all this work and be behind the scenes, get no credit, which the local community most of the time is cool with. That's great. They just want to put on a great event and everyone love their courses.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second something goes wrong, it seems like it's a finger pointing.
Yeah.
So to me, if I were the PDGA, I would have a like... major committee that runs the majors, period. So like they are the ones that are in control of making sure they work with local communities, right? So they would be working right now. Honestly, it's almost similar to what's happening for Worlds in Lynchburg, where you have Nate Heinold coming in, a very experienced tournament director, to make sure it's ran up to the standards of the PDGA, right? And he is working with the local Parks and Rec, local community, and sending guys from his team down to make sure test events are happening, to make sure, like... But that's not the PDGA doing that. That's Heinold and Ledgestone doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that should be the PDGA doing that.
That would make them more uniform, which is what we need.
Yeah, because I think that should be... And what they should do, in my opinion, is I like Worlds being the major that tests the best overall disc golfer. So I like it being, you know, a wooded and an open course. I feel like that should be the identity of Worlds, is it always is on a wooded and an open course across 5 rounds. So there's more rounds than your typical major. You go wooded and open back and forth so that the best overall disc golfer should win, because then you have more rounds and you have wooded and open. I like that. I think we should lean into that as the identity of Worlds. And then I think that the PDGA chooses one international location for right now. In the future, we can probably expand that to more. But where the sport is right now, I think one European location, and then one location on the East Coast, one location in the Midwest, and if they can find one location on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the 4 spots, and they rotate each year. So it goes Europe, then it goes East Coast, then it goes Midwest, then it goes West Coast, then it goes Europe, then it goes East Coast. So then you're scratching
okay.
everyone, and you know, hey, Worlds happened in 2024 in Lynchburg. It's coming back in 2028.
Yeah, that is fun.
So it gives the local community also 4 years to know, hey, it's coming here. The local community can like do what we need to do to get the courses ready. Then it also has a set schedule so that whoever is in charge of running it can be working with the future local community so that there's no like stress and pressure on the local areas to pull all this information, put all these bids together, you know, go to like local governments and stuff and figure this all out. It's just like the places you already have a relationship with, like the Midwest, Emporia, Kansas, you already got a relationship with them there, right? Maybe that's the best spot for Worlds. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But like you figure that out and then we don't have to worry about these bids where it's like, well, looks like Worlds is headed to Topeka, Kansas because it's the only bid we got.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Not that Topeka, Kansas sucks. That was the first thing that came to my mind. But like, if we're going our most prestigious major, title-wise, it's the major that changes players' lives the most, being a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that shouldn't be decided where it goes based on, well, we got two bids and we had to pick the better of the two.
Yeah,
like,
I
feel like that
you.
Should be somewhere where the PDGA can be like, Worlds is coming here. And like that's a super exciting thing.
Yeah, I do agree.
I feel like that's the route it should go. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Just wanted to bring that up because the AM majors, US Masters, all that stuff, the bidding process makes sense to me, right? Of like, but for professional majors, the top of our sport, the pinnacle of our sport, and they've done it with every other major. I feel like those should be like set in stone. This is the rotation, or this is the course, and that's what we're doing. I feel like that's how it should go. So. I don't know. I just saw they were doing it. If your community does want to host Worlds in 2026 or 2027, though, bidding process is open. You can find it on the PDGA. So
let's have a few bids. Let's give them options.
All right. Let's go with we'll answer a few of these questions.
Let's give them a bid for Peaksview.
There you go. Let's answer a few of these questions. These came from Twitter a few weeks ago. Let's see. Because these are the ones we didn't get to. This one was from Swag Heimberg. He said you have to pick one course to play. We're going to say this is the only course. No, we'll just say you pick one. These are your three options. So, A, you have new and large tees, old baskets, moderately wooded, moderate terrain. Course two is small, cracked, uneven tees with brand new chain stars, moderately wooded, moderate terrain. Course C is brand new and large tees, brand new chain stars, no shades or obstacles, flat terrain, all holes are 200 feet.
That one's easy for me.
Yeah,
I'm going A for sure. Are you not going A?
I think I'm going A. Yeah. Well,
baskets.
I don't think old
baskets,
because like I'm not a good enough putter to care.
Yeah.
And I think the tee is what I care about the most.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like I'm gonna have more fun if I have bad baskets and great tees on a great course than if I have awful tees, great baskets on a great course.
Bad tees will lose me a lot of strokes, not because I'm good enough for it to matter, but because it's a mental block for me.
Yeah.
I'll early release discs if I don't feel like I can trust the tee pad.
I won't have nearly as much fun if I do that.
Same.
If I have
and old baskets, I don't care. I could putt at Peaksview Park all day. Well, some of those baskets are new.
Actually, all those baskets are new nowadays.
Yeah, true. But and also, old baskets doesn't have to be one layer of chains. You can still have two layers.
Well, also, old baskets, like we were just talking about, a lot of times catch better.
Yeah, that's true.
The rust wears them in.
Yeah, but I'm used to old baskets in the Charlotte area.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll get to the rest of these because there's three other ones. I think I'm just hit one each week to wrap up the show.
Love it, yeah.
Because why not? Because I think we're at an hour, so that way we aren't here for another 30 minutes to answer these next three questions. Because that was the only one that was like we can hit pretty quick. The rest of these I think we're going to talk about for a little bit. So that's going to wrap up this week's show. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
Silas Select is getting pushed back another week.
Until all of us are here.
It's unfair, because like me and Hunter would probably both get it right.
Yeah.
And then Trevor
problem is if one of us got it right, would immediately claim cheatery.
Oh, yeah.
I would have too last week.
Yeah, exactly. That's so exactly why we didn't do it last week.
It's just you got to have it where like everyone's got to be present so everyone knows there's no cheating involved.
Yep.
So next week, Silas Selects will be back. Next week, we'll also have.
Should we prank Trevor and just say, like, whenever he gets back next week on Griplock, say, oh, Trevor, like last week we did Silas Select and Hunter got it?
We could. Well, should we even prank
Let's try
him?
It.
Yeah, let's just try it. Let's just try to prank him.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. We'll just like act like we forgot until we get to South Select. Like, dude, I forgot to tell you. I got it last week. It was a shark. And we'll just see what he says.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, we'll talk to you again next week with more disc golf to talk about. We'll see you then.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.